welcome to the Hex Knight podcast. Yet again, I am David.
And I am Ivan. And tonight we're going to talk a little bit about tropes. Everyone likes tropes. Everyone likes spending a day like clicking around on TV tropes. And fantasy stories and RPGs have plenty of tropes, some of which are shared, some of which are maybe more like gaming specific. So we thought we were going to basically just have a talk about fantasy RPG tropes and fantasy like adventure tropes that are some that we are tired of or would like to like see the end of, and some that we think are pretty good, actually. So why don't you go ahead with a trope that you would say is good, actually?
One that is good. Oh, man. I was going to start that.
Oh, well, okay.
Good is fine. Good. We do try to tend towards the optimistic side of things, so I can go good.
And we want to lull people into a false sense of comfort here before we hit them.
Community, right? Where we all agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think a positive trope. Like, I really like, I've always been a sucker for, like, the kind of the tired, wizened old wanderer that turns out to be like some super powerful either warrior or like a grand master wizard who just plays the fool, you know, until like time has come to really show his business.
There's strong Dragonlance vibes in that for sure. But there's a lot of, you know, like Gandalf is kind of like that too. Like sometimes he's kind of goofy and dopey, and then it turns out he's like a literal angel or whatever.
right.
Forgotten Realms. I forget the name of Elminster. It's kind of like that. Yeah. I think it's actually kind of a fun trope as well. And it shows up like everywhere. I remember the Fighting Fantasy like game books. They had two different wizards that were both that trope. That's how much they liked it.
Yeah, I think, of course, that also kind of comes out of actual a lot of traditional like mythology and stuff where like the gods would play like some wandering beggar or something just to mess with people. And then, you know, at the most opportune time to like right a wrong or something, they'll like suddenly bust out some crazy powers and flip the script, you know, and kind of
Or it ends up being like a teaching moment or something like, oh, you underestimated this poor old man.
Exactly. Yep. The underestimated the poor old man moment that always gets me in a good way.
I'm trying to think now, because I know I have done like NPCs who weren't who they, you know, who they look to be, but I don't know if I've ever done the straight up like senile wizard or senile old man who turns out to be like the ultra powerful wizard. And ironically, one of the games I'm playing right now is kind of like a folklore-ish inspired game, so it would be a perfect choice for that.
Yeah, it's just so much fun to like play this character up as like this obnoxious fool that's like maybe following along with the player character group, and they're just with it. You know, you can kind of poke at people here and there, and then when things get really dire and kind of out of hand, and the players are overwhelmed, then all of a sudden he rises to the occasion.
Right, but he might have like forgotten occasionally. Like you can't really rely on it.
Yeah.
Actually, there is in because I've been playing or replaying Diablo 3 on the Switch lately, and there's a character you get. He's one of the vendors. He's the guy who like does. He's the like gemstone vendor, and he has this whole thing where he's like very obviously like is actually a god who's just like rolling around on Earth, but he keeps like denying it. And he's also just like a doofus fool. Like when you find him, he's been like trapped in a barrel because like he went on a treasure hunt and he got ambushed or something.
Nice.
So yeah, even Blizzard has it. So yeah, I agree. That's a great trope. And I think it's one that there should be more of.
Well, it's just a, like an easy way to add flavor and like a good NPC. It's a classic like quality NPC that you can put together pretty quick, and it can dig you out of like difficult problems or you know, totally change the direction of a campaign without kind of cheating the players.
And you can also, like, change it up. Like, he could be a drunk, or he could be kind of, like, old and forgetful, or he could be, like, you know, it could be, like, a fairy person from, like, another realm. So they have, like, a weird idea of, like, what's important to people. Or,
yeah.
Like, you can change, you can have the idea, and you can, like, change the flavor a little bit. So, you know, so it's kind of new. So, yeah, I agree that is a good one. My first good one is going to be almost as classic as that, and that is the evil overlord. The evil overlord really only needs like two things. One, he's the overlord. He rules over the evil kingdom, which is evil because it's always like dark there, and he has a giant evil army of evil like dudes. They might be orcs, or they might be dudes, or they might be orcs and dudes. And he's evil because he wants to conquer the world, and he has some nefarious scheme to do it, whether it's like opening a portal for demons, or he has an army of dragons, or he's trying to find the thing. So, you know, like, and I think it's one of those things where, like, we talk a lot, and we've talked about it on podcasts too, that, you know, we want to aspire to like more complex stories and gray environments and stuff. But sometimes it's also fun to have the big evil dude with this big evil army, and we got to go do the big thing to fight the big evil dude. There's a relief in that, like, oh, okay, like we're fighting like the armies of orcs, and we get to go like do that, and we don't have to like worry about if it's questionable that we're doing this or that thing because we're fighting the evil overlord.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Like,
and you don't have to have that complex of motivation either. Like, he wants to conquer the world. Of course, he's gonna like try to poison this town or something. You know, I mean, you can still have some like complexity to it. You know, like an evil overlord can still be an interesting character, but like as the baseline, they, you know, like it's like Darth Vader. Like Darth Vader is basically a bad guy except for like the end when he's redeemed. But he has some motivations to why he is the way he is, or like the Emperor in Star Wars is basically just like evil. But you know, he still has a little bit of like a flair to him, or you know, reasons why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, well, it's like you can build something off that simple base of like you have like one simple thing, and that might be like part of the darkness. It's like it's an incomplete being that only wants power, or is gluttonous and wants to control things, and or just wants to destroy things, you know. And you ask why, and there is no reason why. Like,
that, right?
It's good to have like really bad guys.
Yeah, you know? Like there's a catharsis here. Like we get to fight some dudes, and it's, you know, like we get to do the right thing, and you know, you get to do like a big hero stuff, and it can like it can scale up and down. I mean, you can save the cosmos, or ultimately maybe you're just saving like one village. Like last time before last I ran a Middle Earth game, it ended up just being about saving like Bree, like the town of Bree. That was like the whole game took place there, but they still got to like, you know, fight like or find orc camps or hiding out and deal with like spies and stuff. So it was still cool. But it had that like cool feeling of like, oh, the shadows are gathering. Da, da, da. Like, you get to just be like a little dramatic, and everyone is like on board with that. Cause you know, like a lot of times I think either you're dealing with like, you know, kind of complex, like mature campaigns where there's a lot of questions about what's right and wrong, or it's all about perspectives, or you're playing like kind of like dungeon crawly stuff where there's not really like a morality to it. You're just like getting loot and XPs. So I think it can be like refreshing sometimes to like have a clear cut reason we're doing all this and a clear cut cost that we're doing it for.
Well, to me, like, you know, in building like that, this darkness that just starts like influencing the world by itself and creating like this encroaching dark atmosphere, like I think that's super cool. And that's that to me only really works when you have that big, ugly, bad, and the uglier and scarier you can bring that across, like the better all of that works.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's fun.
I think the last piece to the evil overlord that, and maybe people will disagree with this part, but I think an important part to be an evil overlord as opposed to being like the evil Cthulhu beast is that the evil overlord can be defeated. It may be really difficult. It may require a whole bunch of stuff, like, you know, and he might come back. Of course he comes back, right? but to be a capital E evil overlord trademark, I think it's important that there is a way to defeat him, and somehow you can like affect that. It doesn't mean it succeeds, but to me at least, that sets it apart from like, you can defeat Sauron, you can defeat the Emperor in Star Wars, but you can't defeat like the Chaos Gods in Warhammer or something. So it has to be, that's a distinction between like just a cosmic evil versus the evil overlord, at least to me.
That's perfect. That's part of what makes that fun, and like you can do it in a variety of ways, basically giving them different influences over different things and different motivations, and yeah, that can change and the scale, of course, like you said, and that can vary in unlimited ways.
Yeah, I mean, it actually, like, I guess the post of Childhood of Fantasy is Sauron, right, who is obviously defeatable, but he's also like was the lieutenant of Morgoth, who was only defeatable by like the gods themselves. Because he was one of them. So it kind of like it works in both ways. So that's my good trope. So let's bring the bile out. What's the trope that you're tired of?
Grouchy time. All right. gosh, I'm tired of games that try to include too much stuff, or like I'll boil it down to like, I'm tired of. I don't know if that counts, but like Shadowrun bringing in fantasy, like just finding a way to shoehorn in dragons and orcs and magic, like there's plenty in the game already with the whole like mercenary stuff, the hacking and all the different character classes. Like why do you need to like meddle with a setting that's already like really well realized by throwing in swords and sorcery just because you can?
Yeah, and it's like there's like a term for it called a kitchen sink setting, where it's like like everything goes in. Like Rifts is kind of like that too, right? Where it's just like anything and everything we could think of like goes in the bin, and then we like stir the bin until like a game comes out.
Well, man, it just gets, especially like trying to match like high tech and fantasy together. Never works.
That's definitely like. Yeah, that's definitely like a like peanut butter and chocolate thing, because I don't like it either, but it's obviously like ridiculously popular, so there might be something we're like kind of just not the audience for.
Yeah, I guess, but like it feels like you're just trying to like, okay, we're trying to get the game group together, and this person really likes classic sword and sorcery, and this person likes hacking and like battle mechs, so how do we do this to them? And
that sounds like a recipe for like the worst food ever or something. Like, all right, well, one person likes chili and the other likes vanilla ice cream, so guess what? But yeah, I think sometimes like stuff like that can end up just like feeling, even like some Dungeons and Dragons stuff feels like that to me, where it's like there's so much stuff and it very obviously like was never like kind of meant to fit together. It just ends up feeling like bland and like when there's so many things in there, you just can't like latch on to any of them. I agree with that.
Well, it breaks the setting. I would say specifically with like, I feel the clash between kind of like the sources of power from a technological setting versus, you know, you've got like interstellar travel and like superpowered computers. And I guess like that's where I go. Like the superpowered computer that can read like insane amounts of data and can do all those scans is going to be very similar to like some sort of psionic kind of spell or like mind reading or something else, like extrasensory perception type thing. So it's like you've got these parallel abilities that really kind of double up on each other but are based off
kind
of stories. So
it's the old thing of like, does it matter? Like, if you can like read minds, like, is it meaningfully different if it's because of a spell or a psionic ability, or because you can like, you know, detect pheromone traces or something? Like, that's all basic. Just, or you can hack their like brain.
Yeah, yeah, like, totally.
The case where I could see that kind of working would ironically be the opposite of what Shadowrun is. The Shadowrun is like really like intense mechanically. Like it's a very heavy game. If you had like a really simple game where you just had like very simple abilities and the only thing you put on your sheet is like the effect, like read minds, and then like it doesn't matter how your character does it, you just like roll forward. I don't know. Maybe that would work. But yeah, I get it. It's the same reason because I've done... Like, GURPS can do, obviously, you could put magic and sci-fi in the same game. But the problem you run into is that, like, being able to, like, shoot a fireball is great, but, like, so can a space marine. Like,
yeah, totally.
You know, he's got a rocket launcher with, like, a grenades and stuff. Like, and he can do it, like, 600 rounds a minute. So it ends up being, like, hard to... Or you end up having to, like, okay, well, in order to make the fireball cool, that means, like, the bullets have to be, like, really lame.
Yes, yes.
So I think it can be difficult to like make that actually like feel genuine.
Or just having dudes run around with swords and, you know, mini Vulcan cannons and crap like that.
Now we're back in the Mutant Chronicles.
Yep, exactly.
Well, since you're throwing bombs there, I'm going to throw out a sacred cow then that I think can go to pasture, and that is a wandering monsters. I know we talked about them before, but I don't think I've ever been in a situation where I actually felt that rolling wandering monsters improved a scenario I was running. And as a player, the moment, and this may just be an asshole thing, but the moment I realized that whatever we're dealing with was just randomly rolled and it's just attacking us because you rolled a 17 on the table, I just lose interest. Like, I don't care. Like, I am so tired of just, like, a random meaningless encounters because we've been playing for 2 hours and it's time to have a fight because we're playing the dungeon game or the dragon game or the one with dungeons and dragons in it. We're not naming that. But, yeah, I just, like, throw that stuff in the bin. Give us an encounter that makes sense for the region. And it's not even, like, not having random battles. Like, if we're, like, sneaking around and we know this, like, goblin territory and we get attacked by, like, a goblin, like, hunting team. Like, that makes sense. Like, we're in their turf. We're, like, kicking over their bus-stop signs and stuff. You know, they're going to come have some words with us. And that's fine. Like, that's what you would expect there. Or, like, you know, like, you find, like, the GM has prepared, like, a cool monster. And that monster, like, we happen to, like, stumble through its lair. And now we get to fight this cool monster. That's fine. But if it's just, like, randomly generated because, like, we had been playing for so long and having a good time. And now it's time to, like... play Warhammer for a bit, so I'm gonna roll a die and it says you meet like 3d6 owlbears. Like, what? Just throw it in the bin. My challenge to people who are listening, if you want to do like a challenge to be like a better GM, is take all your wandering encounter tables and put them in a binder, and then take that binder and put it in your car, and then drive down to the harbor in New York City and throw that shit in the harbor, and then go home to where you live, which is probably very far from New York. And the next time you want to put a random encounter in your scenario, remember that you just drove like a week to New York to get rid of it. And then put some encounters in that actually like should just like be there. It would be cool.
Right.
So that's my like, that's the closest I'll get to like a fire hot take for this episode, I think. But I would be happy like never playing in a scenario again with like random encounters. And I know that there's like whole play styles. If you're really into like sandbox games, it's based like holy law that you have to have like encounter tables. And maybe that's fine, but I'll be honest, like I don't give a shit about like hex crawls. So this is our takes.
Right. So I think I get you, like, just having totally randomized, where it's just, like, it's a dungeon, and, like, we're gonna have, like, a rust monster here, and an owlbear there, and, like, none of it really like, matches up.
Right, like, let's pick 20 creatures that the only thing they have in common is they're level 3, and they just happen to be rolling around. Now, I will give, if you have a scenario where it's like, oh, you know, like, while the adventurers are in this area, there's a 20% chance that they alert, like, the one owlbear that's like roaming around, and once you've dealt with that or killed that, then it's not roaming around anymore. Like, I that doesn't bother me. It's the like completely like arbitrary random nature of it,
right? But also if it becomes like a really nasty conflict and all of a sudden it becomes a big deal that can like if not wipe out,
oh yeah, like remember the dungeon we were gonna play? Well, guess what, we just met like 2d12 like giant ants on the way here, so now we're going back to town.
right. So you it's, know, knocks the whole storyline off, and you got to like resupply and heal up some characters.
Right, and in some games that's not really like a thing. Like if we're playing like Harnmaster and we just stumble into some monsters, like that's cool. But our knight only has one arm now, and the thief is like dying of infected wounds. So
right.
Let's just wait eight months while the evil overlord like minds his own business.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my my bad one. So let's swing back to the good tropes.
All right. Good trope number two. I'm a grouchy guy.
It can be good in a grouchy way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like everything is terrible, but this one is a little less terrible.
I like mechs.
All right.
People don't play enough. I feel like science fiction settings and games don't get around as much as they should.
And when they do, they don't have enough mechs in them.
Probably not. I mean, like Traveler, I mean, always comes up, and that's a great game, but
yeah, but it's all like grav tanks, no mechs. Warhammer has, I mean, they have Titans, I guess, but they're like so big you can't really like pilot them. And the BattleTech RPG, now apparently there's like a new one. I haven't seen that, but the old one was unfriendly in its rules complexity. And in order, you basically like have to like know two games anyway, because you pretty much had to also know BattleTech, which is not like a light game either. I've been meaning to like get a chance to play Lancer, which looks really cool, and it's like all about mechs. So there is like one, but yeah, like more mechs, giant like walking robots that you can pilot are cool.
Yeah, it's fun. It's all over like manga and stuff, but I don't know why it hasn't been taken. Maybe because people feel like BattleTech kind of has that field cornered.
Yeah, maybe. But even then, like an RPG that, or another RPG, I guess, after Lancer, that like, because the cool thing is like the mech is like part of your character, right? Like you get to like kit out your mech with different weapons and systems and maybe upgrade it. And, like there's a lot you can do with that. Big Eyes Small Mouth, which was the sort of like main like anime RPG for a long time, had a section where you could build like machines and stuff. And it was pretty easy. They were just kind of like an extension of your character, really. But that wasn't like specifically aimed at mecha stuff as much as it was just... like that was just a thing you could do. But yeah, like a cool like mech game. I guess the question is, because you have to almost like do two separate like kinds of scenario, because you gotta have like mech missions, then you gotta have like stuff that like your pilots can do.
Yeah, I mean, throw it back on into the GURPS pile again. I guess to make that work. Or
I mean, you can have like, you could even do like, if you're playing BattleTech and then you just like role play like the social stuff, like your pilots are dealing with like bureaucracy and the chain of command, or dealing with like the other clan rivalries and stuff, and you just like role play that, and then you like go have battles. That could work.
Yeah, totally.
But I agree. Like, I think it's one of those things where like a lot of sci-fi kind of like wants to aspire to be like, you know, like science fiction, and like walking robots are probably kind of dopey. Like they would just like fall over.
It doesn't make tactical sense.
Yeah, like being like 15 feet tall is not great when there's like a tank division around the hill. So you either have to like come up with a contrived reason for robots to have legs, or you have to just accept that like our world is one where robots have legs. Like BattleTech just like makes tanks like garbage, so it works. Or you know, you have something like you do like Evangelion style with like, oh, like tanks are great, but they can't fight giant monsters.
Sure, you know, that's a good like, way to go.
Mecha Godzilla, right?
Pretty much, but I mean, that's a big part of the fun. Like, you can armor up like crazy, you can pile up all these weapons and just like go crazy on combat and not worry about it and not. But it's still plausible because it's a mech. Yeah. It's like this giant armored thing that's just going crazy, wreaking havoc, fighting other giant things that are doing the same.
Yeah, I mean, you can do like scales too. I know there was a Robotech RPG. I've never like seen the book or anything. I know it was out there, but like Robotech is like at the lower, like those are like, I mean, they're obviously like the size of a plane, right? Because they can turn into them. Right. Versus, you know, you have like Evangelion stuff where it's like giant ass robots. So you can scale it to like a particular level of action, you know, like on the lower end, or even like Starship Troopers style, like Power Armor, you know, like that could be very playable at like still like a pretty basic level. I know that was the old D20 Starship Troopers RPG that set rules for like power suits and stuff. You know, jump around on planets and blow things up. But yeah, so I agree. Mechs, we should have more mechs in games. Also, mech miniatures are really cool. Luckily, there's approximately 10 trillion Battletech minis out there. And if he makes it like heavy gear and I forget the other one. There's a couple that are kind of like well known. There's a lot of mech minis, but we could always use some more.
Or just have another use for them.
Well, yeah, exactly. And like that's an easy way of like getting, you know, if you want to have a game that has some positioning, you kind of want to mess with miniatures a little bit, but you don't want to build, you know, buy like a Warhammer army. If you just need like 4 mechs for your characters and then like the 5 mechs they fight, that's not like super expensive. Mm-hmm. And you can also find like plastic like mech toys on like eBay and stuff. There's a bunch of like Russian plastic kits out there that are like pretty good and like dirt cheap.
Cool.
So my second good trope is, and I mentioned this when we were talking before recording, one that is like a standard trope of like adventure fiction. And I don't think I've ever been in the game, but it was actually like a thing. And that is going and saving the princess. And in this day and age, the princess could also be a prince. We're egalitarian. But the important part is that like King so-and-so, their child, who's the heir to the kingdom, has been kidnapped by insert X here, and could you please go and get them back?
Oh, you can combine that with the big baddie.
Oh, it works perfectly with the evil overlord. Or it could work with like the, you know, like the right hand villain of the evil overlord. Like you can build it all in. But yeah, like there's a person you're there to go save. Like saving somebody who's been kidnapped is obviously like, you know, like that's a clear like motivation. And if you want to like subvert it a little bit, like once you get them, you can find out like all sorts of reasons for, you know, like why they did or did not, you know, maybe they're not that eager to go back. Now you got to like figure out what to do, or like they're kind of like an entitled shit, and, you know, like they're like a royal teenager. Now they're just like being an asshole and you have to haul them across like half the world to get them back while they're complaining about everything.
As like, you're being chased down by
like, yeah, like by orc legions writers. And stuff. I like, know. They're like throwing a tantrum because they wanted to go to the city. It wasn't quite a princess. It was like a farm kid, but in a Harn game, I was doing. I threw a curveball at them. They were going through a town and they were preparing and like loading up on food and other supplies. And they find out one of the farmers had a problem and was looking for someone to help. And they were the only like armed, competent people around, so they asked them for help.
Yeah.
So they find out they're. The farmer's like son has gone missing in the forest, and there's all sorts of rumors that the forest is like full of fairies and it's a dangerous place to go. So they go find out, and they find out that it's a dryad out in the forest, and she's enchanted this boy, so he's like in like a magical slumber, and like he's basically like as far as they can tell, he's in like a magical slumber, but like in the like fairy world, like he's, you know, moving around and doing normal stuff. And they're like, and the dryad wants. He's like, well, I want something in return. So for a moment, they offer one of them volunteers to like trade places just so they can talk to him, right? So one of them becomes like ensorcelled, and the kid like regains consciousness as the other character talks to him. And it's like, well, we're coming here to like take you back. We have to find something we trade you back for. And he's like, no, why would I want to do that? Like, it's a dirt village in the middle of like nowhere. The only thing there is to do is like shovel shit. Here it gets to, like hang out in the forest with fairy magic and like bang a hot dryad. And he didn't want to go back. So they end up like cutting a deal so that she can just like stay. And then they talk the dryad into like, you know, like helping the town out with their crops with like fairy magic. And then they go on their merry way. Which I thought was a good like subversion of like that, you know, like if you're just like a dirt farmer somewhere with no prospects in life, that doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But yeah, so a quest to save the prince or princess or somebody, maybe with some subversions, a twist to it.
Oh, but again, they don't want to be rescued.
Yeah, or like they've decided that, like, you know, like if you want to like make it more of a like mature or like a serious plot, like throw in a twist, but like, yeah, they actually like engineered like to get kidnapped because it was the only way out of like the kingdom.
Yeah.
You know, or some lord turns out the king is in fact the evil overlord and you're mistaken all along. Like once you get to the evil kingdom, that's supposed to be full of like oppressed, terrible, enslaved people. It turns out that like they actually have it pretty good. They're fine and they like that they're like the Dark Emperor is actually like an okay dude. And it was all like propaganda or something. Like you can shake it up a bit. But it benefits from like people knowing what the trope is. That's why like subverting it would be effective.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
You know.
Or you could hint at subverting it, but just not at all. I mean, that would be so novel in a sense.
Yeah, like people keep waiting for the twist and then it's just played straight in the end. But you throw in like enough things to like, you know, like you find some local farmers who are like, yeah, our king, the evil overlord, is like a really nice guy. He makes sure that like the roads are taken care of and he makes sure that like there's no bandits like terrorizing us. It's like, and then when you come into town, there's like public hangings for like petty theft and stuff. Like it turns out it's actually terrible and he is an evil overlord, but it's just like those dudes had it okay.
Right. Like,
you know, like somebody always gets to be on the top of the hierarchy, right?
Totally.
So yeah, so that's my good one. My second good one is, let's go, rescue some.
Sure.
So what do you got for us?
The next bad one.
Yeah. I think we're back to the bad ones.
Yeah. Tropes that I'm sick of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired of open world games in all their forms.
I say, we just keep throwing bombs here.
Railroad people, man. I want a story. I want a big, you know, I want the evil overlord. I want like NPCs that are interesting that drag me and the other players down the road to like, because it goes back. Part of it is what you said about like stupid random encounters that become a big problem, wandering around in circles, not really wasting time. We're exploring, but not really because no one cares.
Yeah, like it doesn't actually matter. Like, right. Especially if you get the feeling that there's not actually like a point out there. Like, I don't mind exploring if it like is going to lead to something, mm-hmm. but if it's just filling in hexes on the map, yeah, that ends up just being like, like, you know, like there's board games that'll do that and generally like do it better because you don't have like the whole setup process.
Right. Well, that's the worst part of it on the other side is as the game master, you might build up like a bunch of really cool stuff dotted all over the map that people can run into and they go to 2 out of 10.
Yeah. So then you either have to like just like all that work was wasted or you have to do like the quantum ogre thing where it's like, well, no matter where you go, like this thing happens. In that case,
yeah.
Like it's not actually like an open world. It's just like a map. We could go either way, but both ways there's a an evil dragon, you know.
I like that. Yeah, the quantum ogre.
I'd seen the term online. It's basically like anytime like there's a choice in the story or the adventure, but like the same thing happens. Like I prepared an encounter with ogres and no matter which way you go, you're going to fight the ogres. It's one of those things that like some people get like really bothered by and some people don't care about, but I just like really like the term.
Yeah. I that doesn't bother me so much, but if you're going to do that, like don't open up like a whole place, just give players a couple choices that actually go somewhere and do something and limit. It's okay to limit those choices.
Yeah. We were talking about it when we had finished the last game I ran and one of the players, we were kind of talking about like, oh, do you want it like more open, less open? And one of the players has, and I'm trying to remember like the exact analogy. There was something like a train trip where you can get off and stretch your legs. And basically it was like the overall story has like a specific progression, like things happen. Mm-hmm. And then like at each point of the story, you get to like go figure it out. Like, okay, like the story has led you to here, but now it's up to you how you're going to like do this thing or get in or what solution you're going to find. And then when that happens, you go on to the next point, which now may be a little bit different based on what you did, and then you get off the train again. And I thought, like, that really, like, nails down for me as well. Like, honestly, and this may be atypical, but I'm not especially interested in, like, I'm one of the players when I do play that I kind of just want to see, like, the story, and I want to, like, I want to have the chance to play my character. I want to have the chance to do stuff that's cool, but I also want to just, like, see what's out there and, like, see what, like, what has been prepared and, like, where's all this mm-hmm. going? Like, how does it fit together? You know, like, the last D&D game I played in, we all had, like, a backstory that was, like, unknown to us. Like, we all, like, found out something cool about our characters. And it was all predetermined. We didn't have a choice in it. Mm-hmm. We had a choice in how we responded to it, what we did with it. And everyone, like, some characters, like, embraced their, like, past, and some were, like, kind of fighting against it, and, you know, but that was our choice, but,
right,
you know, and that was really cool. So, yeah, like, I think a lot of times, like, because everyone has been in, like, a crappy game at some point when, like, the GM was a dick, and it's like, well, you try to leave town, but, like, the guards come and chase you back, and you keep being, like, buffeted back to, like, the one thing you're supposed to do.
Right.
And I think a lot of the, like, complaints about, like, railroading, like, stems out of some of that.
Mm-hmm. Or the story just sucks.
Well, yeah, if it's just, like, stupid or it doesn't make any sense, you know. But that's all, like, I feel like that's more of a skill issue. Like, if you have a good GM, you can make if the group is just, like, on point, you can make an average story, like, still pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I agree. Like, super open stuff just, like, loses my interest. I like a little bit of, like, like, if there's little snippets that are open, like, oh, okay, between, like, this and the next thing, you guys can, like, pick a thing to do. Like, yeah. I like that. Like, oh, well, we've been looking at this thing on the map. Why don't we, like, ride out there and see what's there? But I don't want an entire campaign that's, like, just that.
right.
you know. And I know we've complained in the past off podcast about, like, the proliferation of, like, never-ending, like, open-world video games as well.
Oh, yeah, it's like everything is just kind of a placeholder and it's static, so there's no like cascading set of events that build up into something bigger, because they always have to be there and they always have to be available, so
yeah, and they have to wait, like, for you.
Yeah, like the way they're waiting for me and they're triggered like some Disney animatronics thing, and it just it kills me, like, at certain points, or like stories interact in ways that don't make sense. It's like they should really be angry at not at me, and like playing one faction fighting another faction, then going back to, you know, to faction B to join them, and it's like, oh, they should really hate my character, and that's like,
right
whatever.
Yeah. So that's not a firebomb, but it's one I definitely agree with, like, 99% of the way. I think open world stuff is better used as, like, it's like the best analogy for me is like trying people to, like, chili. There's a certain sort of bro who prides himself that his one skill in life is that he can eat, like, really hot food and without, like, dying.
Right.
So his chili is just like 10,000 pounds of chili, and you are just going to die, like, eating it. whereas, like, a good chili is like has some heat to it, but it also has, you know, like, you can taste all the ingredients and it reinforces the meal and makes it really good. And to me, open world stuff is like that. Like, if you have too much of it, you just get, like, bro chili.
Right.
So my second bad one is going to be less of a firebomb, but it's the backstabbing employer. And this is kind of endemic to, like, cyberpunk games. But it shows up elsewhere, too. Like, you've gotten a job to do for whatever, the wizard or the corporation or whatever, and you go do the job, and then it turns out, we're actually going to stab you in the back so we don't have to pay you or something. So we've, like, hired a second team of, like, elite cyberpunk assassins to go kill the people that we had do the job. And it's, like, it's so outdated and overdone that, like, even, like, Shadowrun books from, like, 20 years ago warned against doing it. And it just kind of, like, keeps showing up because every GM at some point has it in their head, like, oh, wouldn't that be cool? And the answer usually is no.
Well, yeah, if you got experienced players, they're going to be waiting for that, and they'll just, like, blow away the, all right, fuck you.
You're right, gone. You know, like, the whole thing just ends in a giant gun battle. Or they just assume it's going to happen, so they've already, like, made precautions, like.
Right.
You know. So, yeah, just, like, let that one go. It's just overdone. And a lot of times it doesn't even, like, make any sense, you know. Like if you're trying to, like, not to pay these dudes, like, you just hired a bunch of, like, you know, like, elite assholes with, like, poor impulse control. Like, what do you think is going to happen when you screw them over? They're going to, like, you hired them to break into the other heavily guarded facility. They're going to break into yours, too. You know?
Yeah. Going through the trouble to, like, going into, like, through, like, underground channels to contact these groups of dangerous people only to try to double-cross them.
Yeah, like, and it's not like, you know, like, corporate betrayals isn't the thing that happens in real life, but it's usually a lot more mundane. Right. Like, you know, it's going into that amount of, like, trouble. And not only that, but, like, the one, like, group of people who, like, has all of your dirt, and if you piss them off, they will absolutely spill that to your rivals and
oh, totally.
Press.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just ends up being kind of bogus. So, yeah. Not a big firebomb, but one that we could do without, I think. Yeah. So let's round out the good ones.
All right.
Oh, wait. Oh, yes. It's a good one.
Yeah. So my good one, number three, I would like more like, I don't know, more like, this is kind of, yeah, like more of what you were talking about last episode with, like, the magic talking horse and, like, Narnia style characters, or, like, Wind in the Willows kind of whimsical stuff would be a lot of fun. And it's not, I don't think that's used half as much as it could be.
Oh, no, I actually totally agree with that. There's a tendency for everything has to be, like, fucking bleak and depressing. And yeah, like, something that's actually, like, fun and whimsical. Like, why is that such a bad thing, you know?
Right.
I don't know if it's, like, this misguided pretense that, like, everything has to be, like, serious and adult. When all of those, like, fun, whimsical things, like Wind in the Willows, were all, like, made by adults. So clearly it's not, like, but no, I agree with that. Like, you know, whether it's, like, fairy tale stuff or just, like, something that has a bit of, like, levity to it. You know,
well,
like, not,
it adds another dimension to the world. It's like, yeah, people aren't, it goes, I think the other side of it goes back to, like, modern kind of medieval films. Everything is gray and everyone's unhappy.
When in reality, like, it wasn't actually like that. Like, you know, like, people back then liked having colored, like, clothes and would pay more money for them. And people had, like, festivals and, like, sang songs and stuff. Like,
yeah, they loved alcohol and flowers. Like, if you look at, like, like medieval art, it's not like knights and war. It's like flowers and cherubs and dancing satyrs at best.
Yeah.
Like, it's all, like, really bright and whimsical, happy stuff.
Yeah, like, the only exception is basically, like, when you got, like, the Black Death, because then, like, a third of Europe had just died, and they had kind of, like, gotten a kick in the teeth. But, yeah, like, you know, like, and people have always been, like, you know, like, humans haven't changed that much, like, if at all. We might be more civilized in various ways, and maybe that's even debatable, but, yeah, like, you know, people like to, like, have some fun and chill out. Like, we found, you know, in, like, based, like, prehistoric, like, finds, we found, like, you know, little trinkets and gaming pieces, and we found, like, Roman dice and stuff, like,
sure.
But also, yeah, like, just, like, a bit of, like, fairy tale fun, you know, like, have some characters that are kind of, like, memorable because they're, like, enjoyable to be around, not because they're broody Mac Killface.
Right,
you
right.
Know?
Like, how can I, yeah, I think it's, like, having, I guess, like, a lot of games, that more modern stuff fills that in with, like, dryads and fairies and stuff, and they're just kind of, like, they're, like, not, they're fey, and they're not really part of the grim, high-stakes world the players are in, so they can kind of laugh everything off.
But yeah.
I that doesn't work the same way for me. If you have, like, humble, to me, I see it more like a Lord of the Rings thing, but even... if you've got like a happy talking frog man in like a high fantasy world and he's wearing like a waistcoat or something and he's happy right. smoking his pipe and he wants to like have tea and talk about books. I don't know. Like there's something to that, I guess. Like
yeah. It's a way of showing that the world is like way more complicated. You know, like this dude can exist and so can like the Soul Reaver or whatever. Like, and they can exist in the same world.
Yeah.
You know. No, I think that's a really good point. It's something that me and a friend of mine have been talked about a lot as well. Just like more yeah, like stuff that's just like actually like fun and enjoyable. You can still have like weight to the world. In fact, I would argue that it makes the world like feel more weighty because like when the bad things happen and you know, you gotta have some sort of conflict to have a like a game out of it. It has meaning because like, oh shit, like all of these people we know or all these like strange wondrous things are now in danger.
Right, like, right. The ogres are gonna come and trample them all under, like the Tea Party is gonna be ripped apart and they're all gonna be killed.
Right, you like, know. Yeah, that's so yeah, it has like weight and power to it. I mean, that's why like it, you know, like Lord of the Rings, like famously, like the scouring of the Shire.
Yeah,
you know, they return after they defeated the evil overlord, and they find like it's not done. Like we got to protect our own little like corner of the world, you know. And it's like a really powerful like part of the books.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree. 100% agree. That is an excellent trope that we should have more of. So my last good trope is the classic, you meet in a tavern. Because I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. Taverns in fantasy games are like a weird thing. Because they didn't really exist in like most medieval cultures. There was just you're not going to have enough travelers that like a place like that could just like make money on that. They're really more like a Renaissance thing and you start getting like coach houses and stuff like that. And when travel becomes like a thing, you can do more regularly. But like when you have them, you know, like a place where like travelers come to and meet, anyone who's from out of town is going to go there, which means there's interesting people around. There are like rumors and information. You can hear things from abroad. If you need to hire somebody who's like a specialist or something, it's a pretty good place to go. A tavern has all kinds of like great potential for being used in an adventure. I think where it gets like dismissed as a bad trope is because a lot of times you start in a tavern, like in a bad game, and then like either nothing happens because you have to like go find out like what the quest is, and you have to find like, you know, you have to play like connect the dots to just start the game, or like a fight breaks out and now we spend like 2 hours like rolling to hit for like some drunken hillbillies. And then inevitably, like, we kill them, and then the guards want to kill us. Now we are on the run, and, like what was the point of that?
Yeah, totally.
But, you know, like, seen logically, like, if you have a fantasy setting where, like, taverns exist, then it would be the perfect place for a group of, like, heavily armed, like, never-do-wells who want some employment or, you know, or just like professional like travelers and explorers, like that's the place you would go. You know, you need to get a bunch of dudes together to like mount an expedition. Well, where are you going to go? Well, go to where people who don't have jobs hang out and drink. So yeah, I think taverns are absolutely an excellent excellent use in a fantasy game. And you can like update it. It could be like a space bar. You know, go hire some aliens. I mean, look at the cantina and like Star Wars A New Hope.
Sure.
It's perfect. Like, they literally go there to, like, hire another character. You know, they need a pilot and a ship, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think another cool thing you can do besides set that up is, like, the ultimate place to kick off an adventure without, like, having to set up a lot of exposition is that you can, like, as the players are like poking around, like they can hear gossip and you can kind of start building out parts of the world's lore by how characters interact within the tavern.
Yeah, like yeah, you know, like you overhear something interesting, or you can, even if you want to have some like side stuff, you can, like, that's the way to do it, right? You know, yeah. You overhear a rumor that, like, while traveling out there, like, I saw, you know, some weird stuff. I saw like a giant gorilla with three arms. That was weird. And the player's like, we should go check that out.
Yeah, I like, kind of to build off what you said, it goes wrong when you just have like the random group of player characters that have no reason to work together. They're suddenly there together and they're doing the thing and no one knows why, but here we go.
Yeah, then you get like, there's always the one player who wants to be cool and mysterious, because so his character is not going to talk to anybody, and the second player wants to like hit on the barmaid, and the third wants to set the tavern on fire.
Yep.
So, you know, like, avoid those things and like curb that. But yeah, no regrets about putting taverns in your game.
I agree. Yeah.
So, all right. What do we got left? You got one left?
All right. Yes, I do. All right. I'm tired of anti-heroes in general. The Witcher, that type of story. Like, The Witcher's great. Black Company's awesome. But it's like, it goes back, you know, I brought up like the higher fantasy kind of Narnian stuff, like levity, man. Let's lighten this stuff up some, like the spikes and the dread. And it's done. We've done this.
And we've done it for a long time. Like, right. Good Lord. Like, the Elric books came out in what, like the 70s or something. And that was like the, you know, that was supposed to be like the anti, like Conan the Barbarian and anti, like Tolkien.
Yeah.
And then it's like everyone looked at that and was like, let's just do that forever.
You it know, seems like it. There's nothing wrong with having like a, it can be kind of goofy to have a lawful good character, but there's some weird stuff, like Star Trek kind of stuff you can do with that.
Yeah, you can still have, I think. That's actually a really good point, because the thing a lot of times what people are hesitant about is like, oh, if we're all like good heroes and like they're all the same, and that's not, you know, like look at like original series Star Trek, or, you know, even TNG, which is arguably like more lawful good than the original series, right?
It's true. Yeah.
You're right. Know, like Picard is like incredibly moral, and he's like a very specific interest in character. You have all the other, like all of them have like their own like outlook on things. They have their own way of going about things, and they don't feel like interchangeable at all. You know, Worf is a completely different character, even though he's also, you know, very obviously moral just through the eyes of a Klingon.
Yeah. So and, like, maybe it's not like a gripe. It's more like it's okay to play the good guys.
Yeah. I think it's because there's also a tendency, like there's a certain player type who always want to play like something dark and brooding. And sometimes that can, like, you know, it's like the old thing. It's like you tell people you want to run like a Silver Age, like superhero game. And then somebody shows up with a character who's like the Cannibal Punisher.
Sure.
It's like, it's just not like, stop.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, and again, like we've played in like Warhammer fantasy role play and stuff like that. Like, it's not that we're strangers to like bleak and gritty fantasy.
No, not at all. Like, I've done all that stuff a long time.
Yeah, but you know, like you can't eat like Kellogg's cornflakes for every meal, right? Or like Frosted Flakes.
Yeah,
like sometimes, like get some Fruit Loops or something. So I agree with that one.
The same thing as like having the twist. You know, it's like you've got the seemingly ruthless rogue that has a heart of gold deep down. It's like, yeah, we've seen that. Like,
yeah,
put that character somewhere else.
I forget what movie it was I saw a review for where people were like marking it down because there wasn't a twist in the story. Like, and it was like, well. Like, not having a twist is the twist, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, it's. So my last one is going to be pretty short because we're running along, and it's really more of a GMing thing, and that is the rude NPC. And it's not so much having one NPC who's an asshole or two. It's when every single person that you talk to in the game and that you have to interact with is a high and mighty, like, asswipe. No matter who they are, like the tavern owner is a shit and like talks down to you. The guy who wants to hire you holds you in utter contempt. The enemies are all like, Like, it just goes on. Like, the guy who's selling the swords, like, is angry that you're in the store. And it's just, I don't even know where it comes from, unless it's just, like, people who are, like, frustrated with life and want to, like, be mean. But it is absolutely, like, just tiresome. You know, it is, maybe it's the same sort of thing as, like, oh, like, in a gritty real world, everyone, like, drops the F-bomb every two words. And that's not really, like, you know. I mean, so it's just like, it just becomes weird because it's like parody of like, you know, of like human interaction where it's just like, and it just becomes like, because inevitably like one of the players in a group of like five players, somebody's going to get pissed or their character's going to get pissed or both. And now the whole like scenario is just like derailing because he's like, you know, the paladin like challenged like the tavern owner to a duel or something.
Exactly. Yeah, at some point, someone's gonna, if everyone's being crappy to the player characters and they've all got swords and bows and magical spells and fireballs and such, yes, they will use that.
Right, at some point. And now it's like a running battle against the town guards. You know, or it becomes, I've seen this way back in the day, like high school, where it becomes this weird idea of like a morality thing, because the GM is like, oh, I'll show them there's like consequences in the world. So like all the NPCs are giant assholes, and then when somebody finally is like, all right, I just killed the dude. And then like we're all get like captured and like threatened to get executed or stuff because you're, you know, being murder hobos or whatever. It's like... And that's just, yeah, cut it out. Like, half, it's fine to have NPCs who are grouchy and surly, but, like, there's also people in the world who aren't. Like, the vast majority of people, you know, are just, like, okay. They're trying to do their jobs and get by, so.
Right, right. Like, the barmaid's gonna make a joke, or the...
Yeah, especially the people whose, like, their livelihood depends on you spending money with them.
Yeah, totally.
Like, how many great swords is this dude selling that he can like chase off the guy who comes in and very obviously like needs regular like weapon repairs?
Sure.
You know, like, is there like, is that a booming business in like some nowhere town in the Forgotten Realms of like selling great swords? So yeah, that is my final gripe, is cut it out with the rude snide ass NPCs.
Sure. You know, the world that treats player characters like gypsies.
Yeah, exactly. Like, again, like having one is fine, you know, because it can add, especially if it's, but like make it interesting, you know, like, yeah. In the Harmaster game I ran, there was one character, he was a knight, he was a noble, and he was like a shithead noble. And they ended up having to deal with him because he was one of the only sources of like trained soldiers and they needed some troops. So they had to deal with this asshole, and they hated it. And at the end of the campaign, when it was all over, he gave I forget what the item was. It was like a decorated dagger or something. He gave a dagger to one of the characters that he had been like verbally sparring with multiple times as a sign of respect. And it was a really cool little moment. It's like, yeah, this guy's a fucking prick. But he also recognized that while he still thinks you're like a lousy peasant, you had some potential and you did, like, you stood up for yourself. Nice. So it was a cool moment to like use that, but they still hated the dude. I mean, you know, that was intended. But he was like the one guy, like most everyone else in the world was, you know, normal people.
Right. That makes sense. And it makes that one character more interesting and memorable, or other characters that are memorable for other things besides being aggressive and shitty.
Yeah, besides being dicks. Yeah. You know? Especially if it's like the person you're supposed to like get your quest from. Like, that doesn't motivate anyone to like go do the quest.
For
like,
sure.
unless your goal is that we're definitely like going to give the magic crystal to like the evil overlord instead. Because the evil overlord seems to like pay pretty well. He's got a giant army, so he clearly has his finances in order.
Right.
So we're going to go sign up there. So yeah, I think that's our gripes and our things we would like to see him more.
Yeah.
Tropes, traditions, some of which have been around for a long time for a very good reason. And some of them have been around for a long time, and we are sorry about that. So with that, I hope everyone has an excellent summer. I think everyone who's listening, who's a dad, your kids are probably at home and driving you crazy. So we'll be back next week to provide a little bit of distraction from that.
Yeah, stay cool.
Peace out.